Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT, thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCBQ 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 1050 AM Palm Springs.
They still haven't yanked us off. And we have the guests that we were talking about before that I'm surprised you're even coming back. But here we are with The Show Won't Go On. It's the most shocking, bizarre, and historic deaths, performers on stage. And joining us, we've got Jeff Abraham.
How are you?
Wonderful. And then we have Bert Kearns.
Well, now I already know how you are, so hello.
Yeah, don't ask. And so, men, how did you come to write this book? Like, what was it about this subject? And how did you know there would be so many? I was surprised listening to the book, how many different deaths on stage there have been.
The first part of the question, how did we come up with this idea? We all owe it to Donald Trump. It was a little more than 15 years ago that I went to see an Elvis impersonator perform, and part of the show was a man named Al DeVorin, who made famous the phrase, "Ladies and gentlemen, Elvis has left the building. Thank you and good night." And he was milling about in the lobby afterwards, and someone asked him, "When are you going to write a book?" And he said, yeah, I know, I got time. And I said goodnight to him at 10:30 Saturday night. Monday morning, I went to turn on the local morning news, and he was killed in a car accident Sunday morning at 9:30. So less than 12 hours after seeing him, he had died. And I was intrigued by the idea of, you know, final performances. Everyone always said, "Oh, I wish I had saw that concert. You know, that was his last performance," or "I missed his show and he died." And I came up with this title, which I think was pretty good, "The Show Won't Go On." And then I didn't do anything with it for 12 years. Huh. And then the wonderful Bert Kearns said, "Shut up or put up, let's write a book." And that's how it became the book we now have in our hand today. Bert, take it from here.
Well, yeah, we have a little time in our hands and began to do the research. And originally we were going to do a book about people who died on the way to a show. Hank Williams was on the way to a show, on the way home from a show, like Lynyrd Skynyrd, or perhaps even, if we could find enough, some people who died on stage, like Tommy Cooper or Dick Shawn. When we got above 1,000 people, we said, "I think we should narrow this down. It looks like we have enough people who just died on stage." That got us down to about 500. And then we worked from there. We did the research. We divided everything up into categories. We realized, again, there were too many. So we got rid of people who died on camera, movie stars who died on camera, stuntmen. We already had decided we're not going to do athletes, because if an athlete walks onto a field or an arena just because of the physical exertion, death is always in the cards. So we narrowed it down to people who died in front of an audience, whether it's in a theater, a nightclub, a circus, because circus people consider themselves to be performers and not athletes. And again, we got it down to about 500. And in the book now, we tell the stories of about 200 in the end.
Wow.
And they keep dying. That was the other issue that we had. We'd finish the book, and then, you know, four more people would die on stage. We've had five performers die on stage in the past 3 weeks. And they all made international news. There was a bass player in a Chicago tribute band, a drummer in a Motown tribute band, a Spanish pop star performing before 5,000 people who was killed when a pyrotechnic device went in the wrong direction and hit her in the stomach. There was a contestant from South African Idol who collapsed on stage, and it would have been six, but there was a multi-Grammy winning guitarist by the name of Dan Warner. Dan was performing down in Hollywood, Florida, walked off the stage, put down his guitar, walked to the bar, and had a heart attack at the bar. So he wouldn't make the book. No. He didn't die on stage.
Well, I had no idea there were so many people who died on stage. I mean, when you said you started to narrow it down, 500. I mean, I had no idea. It happens fairly regularly, obviously.
Yeah.
I mean, we were able to go back, to the early days of vaudeville, and prior to that, we have magicians doing the bullet catch, going back hundreds of years. So we try to give a nice cross section of history.
An issue I think that we should bring up is the bullet catch.
Yeah.
That is the earliest death that we recorded is 1597. It was a magician by the name of Coulien, and he was performing the bullet catch when the person who was firing the bullet got angry with him and bashed him over the head with the pistol and killed him. And since then, we've had dozens of performers who died attempting to catch bullets. Now, we interviewed Penn Jillette. He and Penn and Teller now probably are the foremost practitioners of that. And he gave us a real, secret that although it's a magician's secret, I think we should share it to any other potential bullet catchers, and that is, it's a trick. They're not really catching speeding bullets. And the most recent we had was at least 10 years ago.
But Superman.
You would think at some point somebody would have learned or realized, maybe this trick might be a little dangerous. But it still has not deterred people.
I really like the the Chung Ling Su story.
Probably the most famous on-stage death of a magician doing a bullet catch, and he was one of the biggest performers in vaudeville, and he was this Oriental magician. It was just a part of his act for more than a decade. And one night, a firing squad shot him, and the bullets went into his chest, and he collapsed. And when he hit the floor for the first time, he said, "In English, I think I've been shot." And the entire audience was in shock, not so much as a man being killed by a bullet, that he spoke English, because Chung Ling Su was really an American named William Robinson and had been living a lie for decades.
Oh, wow.
Also, they originally thought that it was murder, because it turned out that Chung Ling Su had ripped off his act and persona by an actual magician from Peking named Ching Ling Fu. And Ching Ling Fu was a suspect until Chung Ling Su's wife, who was an Asian woman named Su Xin, told what really happened. Then it turned out that Sue Seen's real name was Olive Path. I think she was from Westchester.
It's just crazy. This is crazy. Fake news. I just love it. I just love it. What was your most surprising? Did you have one that just totally shocked you?
I'll start. I think we were surprised when we found out the most dangerous profession, the most dangerous occupation in show business. We figured it would be something along the lines of bullet catchers or perhaps acrobats. But, Jeff, what was the most dangerous occupation in show business?
I was going to say circus performance was my first guess in the early draft of the book. But during the course of our research, Bert kept on handing me entry over entry of orchestra conductors. which turned out to be the most fatal occupation you will find in our book.
How does that work? how do they die?
They die in the podium, on the podium, you know, in front of the orchestra and the crowd in the middle of a piece.
It's like a heart attack.
Into it, a lot of them are heart attacks. There was one suicide, but that's a whole other story. But I think the real reason is that they're all between like the ages of 50 and, you know, 75. Orchestra conductors, you know, travel around the world. They eat airplane food. They stay up late. They have to deal with orchestras in different parts of the world, and they don't watch their cholesterol. I think it's a matter of that. They're just not healthy. They don't live healthy lifestyles. Most of the performers that we deal with here, I mean, we have suicides, we have accidents, we have murders on stage, but for the most part, people are just, you know, falling from heart attacks and, you know, aneurysms, whatever, because they're not watching their diets and they're not staying healthy.
So it's these old dudes flailing around with their stick and then just keel over in front of everybody.
A lot of physical exertion, I guess.
Talking about me again.
Yeah.
Now, I have to ask you mentioned there were some murders on stage. I read one about a guy who went and shot the former leader of Pantera or something. He shot a guy on stage. How often does that happen?
More often than you would think. You know, we've had performers who've been shot by fans. There was one incident going back to the bullet catch where someone said, "I will now attempt to catch a bullet," and a member from the audience said, "Well, try to catch this bullet," and he shot him.
Oh, jeez.
So a stray bullet is a stray bullet is something that you will find throughout our book in several occurrences.
Wow.
Yeah, and in the case of Dimebag Darrell Abbott from Pantera, back in 2004, he and his brother Vinny had a new band called Damage Plan, and they were playing a club in Ohio, and a crazed ex-Marine just ran up onto the stage and shot him point blank in the head. I believe he killed two or three other people before he was killed. Yeah. And we've had cases like that. There was a young girl named Christina Grimmie, who was a YouTube sensation. We covered social media performers. She went on and became famous as a contestant on The Voice. She was in Orlando, Florida, performing and doing a meet and greet after the show when a stranger who was supposedly obsessed walked up and shot her and killed her. Her death was overshadowed because less than 48 hours later you had that Pulse nightclub massacre by the terrorists in the same city. So, yes, it keeps happening in all forms, yeah.
I found that there was also the Dick Cavett show, and you talked about one that health nut that died on stage when he said he was going to live forever. Now, that one never did air, did it?
No, it did not, and it's funny, during the course of our interview, several people have said, "Oh, I saw this on YouTube," and even Dick Cavett says to this day, 20, 30 people a year come up to him and said, "The look on your face," and he always has to say, "Were you in the audience that night? If not, you did not see the show."
That's right.
It did not air. We were very fortunate that a very dear friend of ours worked for Dick Cavett Productions and said, "If you sell this book, we will allow you to watch this episode," and we are the first civilians/journalists who've ever watched this episode. You can literally count the number of people on one hand who've actually seen this episode.
Wow. How was it?
The description you guys gave is pretty haunting, so I'd love to hear you talk about that.
We were allowed to tape the audio, so we were able to get an accurate transcription of it. And over the past, you know, close to 50 years, there have been a lot of misconceptions, because even when Dick Cavett talks about it, he doesn't watch it that often, and he has a few things that are wrong here and there. The first most striking bit about it is, you talk about a late night talk show. Well, most, you know, they have big sets and they have a desk and they have a couch. He did his show from the set of Wide World of Sports, where they used to report the weekend edition. So they were on three swivel chairs on a orange shag carpet. And Dick Cavett was interviewing, the journalist Pete Hamill, and J.I. Rodale, the longevity expert, the health expert, was sitting to Hamill's right, when in the middle of the interview there was a snoring sound, and as the legend has it, Dick Cavett leaned over, because he's a very witty person, and he said, "Excuse me, are we boring you, Mr. Rodale?" But in actuality, although there were some giggles from the audience, Cavett knew right away that something was wrong, and there was immediate alarm on his face. And he looked at the audience, and he said, he told us this, he was about to say, is there a doctor in the house? But he realized if he said that, he'd get a laugh. And we've had instances where that happens. So he caught himself and said something else. He said, can we find out if he needs some help here? And within a couple of moments, you know, the audience was dead silent. They all realized that something was wrong. And the man died on stage there. He died right in the studio.
Well, I want to go on his diet.
Now, is it true that he said something shortly before that about living for a long time or living forever?
He was quoted in the New York Times the Sunday before his Tuesday appearance about living to 100, but he did not utter such a phrase. But the one phrase he was talking, he was a very funny gentleman. He had written plays and humor books, and he said, oh, I want to save this material. I want to be back. And Dick Cavett said, oh, don't worry. We will have you back.
Mm.
And I thought that was such a striking remark, which had never been heard before.
Did they have him back? Oh, sorry.
Too soon.
Yeah. I still feel the pain.
Could you guys tell us a little bit about what happened with Dick Shawn? Because I found that story pretty fascinating.
Dick Shawn was an amazing performer, larger than life, full of energy. You never knew what was going to happen in his show. And, you know, the show would open with him lying under a pile of newspaper and just popping up from the audience. So for him to fall or do any type of sudden things on stage should not be a surprise to the audience. You never knew what was going to happen in the show. He was not a traditional stand-up who stood in one. He moved, he sang, he danced. So at one point in the show, he started to make a very sudden speech. Bert?
Well, in the middle of the show, which is very avant-garde, he stood on the stage and he said to the audience, let's pretend that there's been a nuclear disaster. And everyone in the world, no one else has survived except the people in this theater. And I will be your leader. And at that point, he fell face down onto the stage.
Oh my God. He laid there.
Now, it turned out that his son was a stage director, and his son was at the back of the auditorium. And he said, well, you know, Dad doesn't usually fall that way, and not at this point in the show. So over the headset, he talked to the stagehand. He said, go out and check and see if he's all right. So the stagehand went out, checked, and then walked off the stage. And he said, well, what happened? Is he breathing? And the guy said, I'm not really sure. And at that point, all hell broke loose. They called for a doctor in the house, and luckily, well, it didn't turn out to be lucky, but there were four doctors in the second row because the theater, which was at the University of California, San Diego, was right next to the hospital there. And they worked on Dick Shawn, couldn't bring him back, couldn't save him. But while they were doing it, while the rescue efforts were underway, people were walking up to the stage and asking for their money back.
Oh, jeez.
And that's not unusual either.
Really? That happens a lot?
That's happened quite often.
There's a wonderful story about a TV comic character actor named Joey Ross, who you will know from Car 54 and Sergeant Bilko. He was in the latter part of his career performing at a retirement community in the rec room, and he collapsed in mid-performance, and his soon-to-be widow walked up to the stage to collect his money, and they said, well, here's $50, here's half the money. He did not complete his performance.
You gave him half a show.
Jeez.
Also, to answer your question about Canadian performers.
Here we go.
Do you guys remember Marge Osborne? The girl from the Singing Hills, from Don Messer's Jubilee.
Don Messer's Jubilee, how about that? Yep, oh yeah, for sure.
Yep. It was 1977, she was on stage and had a heart attack, died in concert in Rockland, Ontario.
Oh.
And her co-star, old step dancer Charlie Chamberlain, died of a heart attack exactly 5 years earlier after he collapsed during a TV rehearsal. And then the other Canadian is Owen Hart, the WWF wrestler.
That's right.
We didn't include athletes or wrestlers in the book, but his was different because he didn't die Oh, well, he died in the ring because he fell from the rafters trying to make a spectacular entrance from the rafters. The clip snapped too early, and he fell 80 feet to his death in front of the cameras and in front of the crowd there.
Yeah.
And then one of the early incarnations of the book, we obviously included people like John Candy, one of the great Canadians who died during the filming of the movie, I believe it was Canadian Bacon. He shot his scenes, went back to his hotel room, and never woke up.
Yeah. Tragic.
Pretty amazing.
Sorry to bring the room down.
I miss Uncle Buck so much.
This should be the right time to announce we're coming out with a children's coloring book and a comic book. Perfect for kids.
I look forward to that. We need red crayons for that one, I sure.
We should note though that again we're giving you the cavalcade of face plants and deaths here. The book really, and we went out of our way to do this. The book really is a celebration of these performers' careers. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't just focus on the way they went out. You know, we've spoken to a lot of survivors and friends of people who died on.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Stage. And they're anxious to talk to us because they wanted people to know about, you know, the performers' lives and careers, to know that, you know, that their careers were so much, you know, greater than the way that they died.
Yeah.
A lot of these guys spend so much time on stage, no wonder they die there. It's just, you know, it's a numbers game.
Yeah, and when you get people that are older, you know, the people that are in their 80s, and they say there's no way I'd want to go if to go on stage. We've had a lot of that happening, and people say, oh, it's so great that, you know, Lil Hardin, the widow of Louis Armstrong, you know, dropped dead at the piano during a tribute show. Or Jane Little, you know, 87 years old, the holder of the Guinness Book of World Records for the longest tenure with an orchestra, you know, dropping dead during There's No Business Like Show Business. You know, what a way to go. But when you get someone like Dick Shawn, who was 63, and, you know, he died in 1987, and I speak to his son, you know, all these years later, and his son weeps, and, you know, he lost his best friend, and that's Yeah. We had to remember when we were writing this book as well that although a lot of it is humorous and ironic, it's not a snarky book, and it's not anything that we're making fun of anybody.
Yeah.
But, you know, a lot of performers do have that bravado, you know, I want to go out like so-and-so, you know, I want to die with my, you know, with my boots on. You know, the amazing Jonathan, who's was a former client of mine and still a dear friend, you know, he's been dealing with a terrible heart ailments, and they gave him a year to live, and he surprised his doctors, and after 3 years went back on stage. And he says in the documentary, you know, I hope I go out like Tommy Cooper rather than dying in bed, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And when we gave him the book, he thanked me for the book and then said, you could have waited a little longer, I would have made one of the chapters. So some performers do have this bravado. They all say, oh, I hope I go out like so-and-so. And then you have others who said, well, that was nice, but we'd rather have him around for another 20 years.
Well, when I was reading the article about your book, I was fascinated by the story about Albert Brooks' father, where he died in Milton Berle's lap. I think that'd be a good way to go.
Well, I heard Milton Berle was packing, so I don't know if that's
yeah.
Well, that's a whole other book.
There you go.
Now, you say that's a wonderful way to go. It depends on who you ask.
Well, yes, exactly. I'm sure Milton Berle wasn't thrilled about it either. So.
You know, Albert says, what a wonderful way for my father to go. He didn't die on the way to the show that night. He didn't die in mid-performance. He waited until he got his last laugh, took a bow, and died, with applause still ringing in his ear. If you ask the late Super Dave, Bob Einstein, he will say to you, what did your mother do for a living? Oh, she was a housewife. Well, what if I went into the kitchen and hit her over the head with a frying pan and killed her? Would you say she died doing what she loved? So talk about the yin and yang of
Yeah, and I don't think most people know that Albert Brooks and Super Dave were related, so that's also
they were brothers.
Story. Yeah.
Also,
Albert's real name was Einstein.
Albert Einstein. Do you know that his father was a comedian?
That's pretty crazy. And now, when you have so many of these stories, you're going to do a second book, aren't you?
We hope, if the public demands, yes. We do. We definitely have room for several sequels. As a matter of fact, on our website, theshowwon'tgoon.com, we've been keeping track of people who died on stage in 2019, and we're already up to about 20 people. They keep dying on stage.
And as we mentioned, that I mean, there were so many TV people, and like we were not included because of we wanted to have the audience aspect of it. So yes, there's enough to do a sequel if we play with the parameters. Bert, tell them about the wonderful Lee Morgan who we wanted to include the book, but our criteria was too strict.
Well, that was an issue of who do we include in the book? You know, Sergeant Carter, Frank Sutton from the Gomer Pyle show.
Well, Sergeant
Carter. He was ready to walk on the stage at a dinner theater in Shreveport, Louisiana, but had a heart attack in his dressing room, didn't make it. The great jazz trumpeter Lee Morgan was performing in a club in the East Village of New York City when he was shot through the heart by his common-law wife because he had been there with another woman. She was angry and killed him. Now, he didn't make the book. We wrote his story originally, but he didn't make the book because although his band was on stage waiting for him, he was walking toward the stage when he was shot and didn't quite make it onto the stage.
Mm-hmm.
So he didn't make the book.
Oh. How did you narrow down the 500, the 800 and all that? Like, was there something else that would make you include someone? Like,
We did go for the most shocking, bizarre, and historic. Really, that's what we did. You know, and we said let's take you know a few from theater. Then we've got to take a few from opera. Then we've got to take a few from the world of dance, magic, circus, rock and roll, jazz. And so, yes, that's how we had to do. We kind of took the best, the ones that had the most interesting stories, as well as some of the most, you know, ironic, you know, shocking endings as well. You know, we found several rock musicians were killed by electrocution on stage.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of common wisdom that the first rock and roller to be a rock and roll guitarist to be electrocuted on to death on stage is a guy named Les Harvey from a band called Stone the Crows. And that was in 1972. And he was 27, so he's probably the least known member of that 27 club of rock stars like Amy Winehouse and Jim Morrison, who died at the age of 27. Well, anyway, we did some more research, and we found out that there was another rock star who was electrocuted to death on stage 3 years before Les Harvey, and that was Nick Lowe. You know Nick Lowe?
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah, Nick's alive and well, but yeah. Nick was electrocuted to death on stage, and he tells the story that he was on stage with his group, and he touched a microphone that wasn't grounded, and he began, and he was thrown across the stage and flopping like a fish, and he couldn't let go of the microphone, and the current, and they couldn't turn off the current. And he says that people were running around in circles around him, and in his mind, everything went into slow motion, and he heard a voice say, "Well, Nick, I guess this is the way you're going to go. Say goodbye now. This is the end." And at that point, his keyboard player tried to kick the microphone out of his hands, but instead missed and kicked him in the chest. And doctors told Nick Lowe that that restarted his heart and brought him back to life.
Oh, my God.
They brought Nick to the hospital. The band went across the street to the pub to drown their sorrows. They thought he was dead. Nick Lowe told us that he woke up in the hospital. His hands were all burned, but he realized he was alive. He tore out all the wires that they had attached to him and walked back to the pub and walked into the pub, and they all thought they saw a ghost. They all screamed and... they went and played the second set.
So whose voice did he hear, or was it just in his mind?
I think he heard depending on what you believe. I think he believed he heard his maker saying, "Come on, Nick, come to the other side. It's time to go."
It was Satan.
But to continue on your question about narrowing it down, we wanted the stories to be engaging. Did not always have to be a household name, and that was one of the most important things, you know, besides the bizarre and the outrageous. Is we wanted, you know, when you're writing a chapter, we wanted you to follow that person's journey and care about that person and being so enthralled about their lives and that you'd be so taken aback when their final demise happens. You know, because, you know, when we were pitching this book, one literary agent said, "You know, this is the worst mystery novel I've ever read. Everybody dies on the first page of every chapter." So you really wanted these stories to be engaging enough to want to continue to reading. Because we could have done a book of lists, you know, and just say, "He died and he died and he died." But we wanted to do so much more than that.
Yeah, and in this case, we do have, you know, we have the famous kind of lined up shoulder to shoulder or laid out shoulder to shoulder with the obscure, and they're all joined by this glorious climax to their lives and careers, you know, dying on stage surrounded by friends, colleagues, and fans, and doing what they loved.
What can you tell us about a theater death?
Well, one of the ones that became one of our favorites happened only 2 years ago, and again, this is a person who was a bit obscure, but he was very world famous in an entirely different field. His name was Kent Stork, and he was from Omaha, Nebraska. And Kent owned a flower shop, and he was the world's leading authority on the African violet. And he traveled the world from China to Russia, lecturing on the African violet, wrote a best-selling guide to growing African violets, but really wanted to be an actor. He really wanted, that was his thing. He wanted to be on the stage. He got the acting bug. So 2 years ago, he turned 65. He and his wife decided to retire. They closed the place. They closed their flower shop and moved to a suburb of Las Vegas so they could be close to their son and his family. Immediately, Kent got himself a gig with the local theater company, and he got the lead role in a community theater production. When he went on stage with it, had a heart attack on stage, and died. And the name of the production, the name of the show that he was performing was The Art of Murder. And so that got, you know, that right away got headlines, got a few laughs. We actually talked to his son about it. And his son said, you know, he got a kick out of the fact that, you know, he went on Facebook and people were responding to it saying it sounds like a bad episode of Murder, She Wrote. But in reality, because it was called The Art of Murder, Mr. Stork had a fake pistol in his pocket when he died. So when they brought him to the hospital, in the emergency room, they said he had a gun on him. And that night, the police called his wife and asked if they wanted to do a murder investigation into his death. And she said, no, it was just a heart attack.
Hmm.
Well, that's because she killed him.
Yeah.
Of course she doesn't want an investigation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just took a while.
So why don't we hear about all these? I think that's one of the biggest things, because when I listened through the book, I was surprised about how many there are, and you tell us how many hundreds there are. It's just something that never seems to be covered. A lot of this really surprised me, and some of them were people I knew.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we found, you know, small newspaper articles in trade magazines, trade journals. A lot of them, you know, don't get a second day on the story. They might just get a small item, especially when you're looking in the worlds of classical music and opera and deaths that occur, you know, out of the country. You know, a world famous musician named Papa Wemba from the People's Republic of the Congo. He was well known because Peter Gabriel had him on a couple of albums, and Peter Gabriel brought him on tour, and he became famous in the West for the way he sang. But he's a giant star in Africa, and he died on stage on video. The most interesting thing about that was Peter Gabriel wrote a tribute to him online when Papa Wemba died, and he said, you know, he was a great artist. We really miss him. And that arrest that he had for human trafficking, well, we'll just put that aside. We were like, what? Human trafficking? What? And so we do the research, and it turns out that Papa Wemba had a good scam going. He would charge people, I think, $5,000 to, if they wanted to get to Europe out of the Congo, they could go on his plane with his band and pretend they were members of his band. And at one point at Charles de Gaulle Airport, there were 21 people showed up. None of them had any instruments. They all said they were part of his band. They were playing that night, and they all disappeared. So he was arrested, and he did some time in jail. But eventually, he was acquitted. Oh, he wasn't acquitted of the charge, but I think he was sentenced to time served and went back to Africa. So that's a good little interesting sidebar that we found.
Yeah, so you find out more.
But at the same time, certain deaths have become international news just because there is now recorded footage of them. You know, like some of these Cirque du Soleil performers who have died in mid-performance, people in the audience have cameras. So, you know, that video then goes on the local news and then goes viral. So in one way, a lot more of these deaths are now being captured because someone was there in the audience with a camera.
Now, isn't that what happened when Meatloaf collapsed on stage? There was videos all over YouTube and Twitter, people, and he survived, but there were people instantly putting the video online. That's a change in the way things work now.
And the New York Post, and his most, you know, he collapses every once in a while, old Meatloaf. his most recent collapse, we saved the front page. The New York Post reported that he died, and they had to retract the story. And that's, again, that's another thing that we did in the book. We found that people always go from the initial newspaper account, and then when they do a follow-up story, they just repeat what had already been reported. And as we know, initial newspaper accounts are not always accurate. They're done on deadline, and there's some misinformation that is usually corrected a few days later. So we were able to correct we found a lot of discrepancies in those initial newspaper reports that you might find on Wikipedia now, and we tried to set the record straight.
Now, Jeff, I have to ask you a question. I was reading an article about you guys, and it said that, I hope I got this right, it said that you had represented George Carlin.
I was George Carlin's publicist for the last 11 years of his life, and it was, you know, we just did an event, and when the MC reminded me, He did a Q&A with George in May, and 6 weeks later, he had was given the honor of the Mark Twain Prize, and then died four days later. And never was there to receive it. Yeah.
Well, I had to ask you because I'm a huge fan of George Carlin, and when I read that, I hate to say, the very first thing that popped into my brain was that bit that George used to do about claiming that there is no God, and saying, "If there is a God, may He strike this audience dead." And then he said, I'm going to up the stakes, and if there is a God, may he strike me dead. And so obviously he didn't die on stage, but that was obviously made me think about the subject of your book and him.
No, he did not die on stage, but he was very close to it. He was performing one of his live HBO specials and really had trouble breathing, his second-to-last special. He was not in great health. He was having heart problems and things of that nature over the last 5 or 6 years of his life. And we think, you know, the doctor probably, his father did not have good heart problems, did not have a good heart, and I think it was hereditary. And we think the doctor said, you may have 5 months, 5 years to live, we don't know. So when George died, it wasn't 100% unexpected, but it was at the same time very surprising.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty amazing.
And who, ironically, was planning an HBO special at one point. You'll love this. in November of 2001, he was planning a special with the title, I Kind of Like It When a Lot of People Die.
Yeah, yeah.
And then there was a little thing called 9/11. And then he realized maybe that may not be the best title for a special, and they had to rename it.
But they did release that on audio.
Yeah, about 15 years after the thing, there's a performance of George doing it from the 9th and 10th of September in Las Vegas.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I remember his show that he did, was it like 3 weeks after 9/11, where he in the Beacon Theater in New York, where he came and he kind of said, you know, we have to talk about the elephant in the room, but that's not going to stop us from having a good time tonight. And I thought he handled it really well, because he did have to change a lot of his show.
Yeah, that whole chunk was taken out, moved into another special, and it kind of changed the focus of it. But it was great to now have that album with that as he had done it.
Well, thank you for sharing that, because I just had to ask.
Of course, thank you.
Well, guys, and now you have a website. What's it called? The showwillgoon.com? Is that it? Won't go on.
The show won't go on.com. You can also get there by typing in diedonstage.com.
Oh.
You can get there a couple of different ways. But yes, and we have videos, we have outtake stories. We have the story of Lee Morgan and other outtakes from the book, that stories that didn't make the book. And we have videos, and again, we're keeping track of people as they continue to pass away while performing.
And I know this show is heard in Southern California, and they can look at our website for book signings that we'll be doing throughout Southern California.
Fantastic. We'll have that and the book on our website as well, and people listening can just go one click and pick up the book. Hopefully you won't be talking about any of us in the near future.
No videos.
No,
definitely won't.
Well, you never know. Wow, it's been a great show. You guys are a lot of fun, and we appreciate you coming on. And the book is The Show Won't Go On, and the authors are Jeff Abraham and Bert Kearns. Thank you for being here.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Stay healthy.
Thank you.
To find out more about our show, guests, or to listen to past shows from our archive, please go to www.houseofmysteryradio.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.